Hello, everyone. My name is Elijah David, minister of the 12th Apostolic Church of Trinity Congregation. I was not the 12th hour in the Oregon, Texas. Today is January 21, 2023. It is the 30th day of Shivat 26. We're going to start our first service today on this Sabbath day with a song, and then
whosoever will. Whosoever is, it shall shout the sound. Send the blessed tidings all the world around. Spread the joyful news wherever man is found. Whosoever will may come. Whosoever will, whosoever will. Send the proclamation over veil and hell. There's a loving Father, cause a wonder whole. There's a ever love made strong. There's a ever coming, need not delay. Now the door is open, enter where you may. Yeshua is the truth, the holy living way. Whosoever will may come. Whosoever will, whosoever will. Send the proclamation over veil and hill. Tis a loving Father, calls a wanderer home. Whosoever will may come. Whosoever will, the promise is secure. Whosoever will, forever must endure. Whosoever will, is not evermore. Whosoever will may come. Whosoever will, whosoever will, send the proclamation over Ben Hill. There's a loving Father, cause a wanderer home. Whosoever will may come.
And then we're going to go into a regular service, which is taken from a little tract written by the late Adventist back in 1993 called the SDA Layman Movement out in California. It was compiled by J. Walters, a Seventh-day Adventist. But he was a believer in the Shepherd Rod, this Leite Hala, but he didn't believe in no feast days. They only believed in was the things that the way Viti Hoff explained the prophecies, and so therefore he thought he could write it, redo Viti Hoff's writing with the Adventist flavor. He did a pretty good job, and he called it the Last Gospel, Chapter 1, where he started his little tract. Okay, I called those people in person when I got this little tract. Nearly 20 years ago, I called him in person. They said, "Oh, we're just Seventh-day Adventists, all we are." I said, "Well, you're sure using the shepherd's rod material?" And I said, "Well, we're Seventh-day Adventists." They didn't want to even admit the word shepherd's rod. Let's start now with for his church. In every generation, Yahweh has a special truth and a special work. For the truth that is hid from the worldly wise and prudent is revealed unto the childlike and humble. It calls for the self-sacrifice. It has battles to fight and victories to win. At the outset, its advocates are few. By the great men of the world and by a world-conforming church, they are opposed and despised. See John the Baptist, as the forerunner of the Yahshua, which Yahshua called him the Elijah of his day. Standing alone to rebuke the pride and formalism of the Jewish nation. Well, that's the same thing Elijah the Tishbite did back there when he went to see Ahab upon Mount Carmel. Elijah the Tishbite stood alone. Well, John the Baptist stood alone. He was Elijah of his day. My name is Elijah. David given to me by the Scriptures. And I have the same burden and the same calling. And this day, and I experienced the same thing of standing alone. See John the Baptist as the forerunner of the Yahshua. Standing alone for the rebuking of the pride and formalism of the Jewish nation. See the first bearers of the gospel into Europe. How obscure, how hopeless seemed the mission of Paul and Silas as the two tent makers, as they with their companions took ship at Troas for Philippi. See Paul, the aged and the change of preaching Yahshua and the stronghold of the Caesars. See the little communities of the slaves and peasants inflicted with the heathenism of the imperial Rome. See that Martin Luther was standing that mighty church, which is the masterpiece of the world's wisdom. See him holding fast Yahweh's word against the emperor and pope declaring, "Here I take my stand. I cannot do otherwise. Yahweh be my help." That's taken from Christ Object Lessons by Ellen G. White, page 78. See also Great Controversy, 609. Opposition is the lot of all whom Yahweh employs to present truths specially applicable unto their time. Well, that's what we're going through today. I have present truth that comes to me every day that the church needs to hear. There was a present truth in the days of Luther, a truth at that time of the special importance. There is a present truth for the church today. Great Controversy 143. Some truths are applicable in all ages and are therefore present truths for every generation. Others are of a special character and are applicable unto only one generation, for they are none the less important. However, because of this, for upon their acceptance or rejection depends the salvation or loss of the people of that generation. Of this kind was Noah's message of a coming flood unto the generation to whom it was preached. That message was present true. Bible reading for the home circle, page 132. There are many precious truths contained in the word of Yahweh, but it is the present truth that the flock needs now. Early writings, page 63. What is present truth for the church today? This is the next subtitle. question that is asked. For it was brought to our attention in booklet number 7 by this J. Walters, The Last Labors of the Vineyard. And that's who we are. Elijah, David, we're the house of David, the everlasting kingdom. We're the fifth group and last group of laborers in the vineyard. And that's in Matthew 20, verse number 6, called at the 11th hour. That five calls were to be made for laborers to go into the Yahshua's vineyard for the proclaiming of the truth for their time. These calls began with the Exodus movement and were to continue one following another until the final gospel is proclaimed. We found that each call was accompanied with a message of the present truth applicable unto the particular time. For the object of the book, of this booklet is to define more clearly the final message proclaimed by the last laborers, those called at the 11th hour. Now here's the Seventh-day Adventist minister. He called on to the V.T. Holliff and his writings, and V.T. Holliff claiming to be the last messenger, being the fifth call, fifth group. And this preacher, I believe, this Adventist preacher believed it, and so he's going to try to identify what this last message is. And so he wrote it out in this little tract. So now this minister, J. Walters, goes on, and he says, the last gospel to be proclaimed. Now he's claiming that he knows what the last gospel to be proclaimed is. But this last message is about this fifth group of laborers. And I'm the head of this fifth group of laborers that was put in charge of this in 2003. Exactly 10 years after this Adventist wrote this little booklet, inquiring and thinking that he already knew what the fifth message was, it didn't come until 10 years later, and it came to the person it was intended for, the antipical Elijah, David, which is myself. So it says, at the time of Yahshua's first advent, the disciples were inquiring of the Yahshua, what would be the signs of his second coming and of the end of the world? Matthew 24:3. He told them of many events to transpire from their time and down into the last days. He spoke of wars and rumors of wars, famine, pestilences, and earthquake in divers places. He then related unto them the last gospel to be proclaimed. He stated that the gospel of the kingdom shall be preached in all the world for a witness unto all nations, and then shall the end come. Matthew 24:14. Now the Adventists claim to be preaching the gospel of the kingdom, and they call it the three angels' messages. The thing is, it was their gospel. The three angels' message was given to them, and they were this kingdom. But they thought that this three angels' messages came from the kingdom in heaven. No, it came from Yahweh. But the kingdom of heaven was not set up in heaven. Yahweh sent his son Yahshua in Daniel 2:44-45. To set up this kingdom here on earth, with this message going forth from it here on earth, not in heaven. So anyway, it says, here we see that the last gospel to be proclaimed. Now, see, another thing, first you need to understand the definition for the gospel. What that means. It's two English words that was taken by the English people, meaning God spelled, two words, God spelled it out, and the law of Moses. That's what gospel means. In other words, the sanctuary system restored, put into operation, showing the plan, how you have salvation through the blood of the everlasting covenant of the sanctuary, and put the sanctuary in operation and show the people how to perform true worship so that they can get this blood applied to their records for sin and how to purify themselves, how to be sanctified and sanctify the holy name of Yahweh and His Son Yahshua. That's what gospel means. But see, nobody knows today what gospel means. Adventists don't know what the word gospel means. Because they don't know what it means, they just call it the good news. Good news of salvation. If Christ is coming back again to take his saints back to heaven. That's the good news of the gospel. All right. Well, they're wrong. Here we see that the last gospel to be proclaimed is the gospel of the kingdom. So bring that up to date. It's the kingdom of Israel that's set up here on earth that has been restored. The kingdom of Israel has to first be restored here on earth before you can preach the gospel of the kingdom to the world. You got to first have the kingdom restored. The kingdom was subjugated after Solomon died. The kingdom of Israel split up into two kingdoms. 10 tribes of the north, with Samaria as their capital. 2 tribes of the south, Judah and Benjamin. So Israel was split up in two kingdoms, but Israel had to be put back together. Those two kingdoms had to be put back together into one kingdom on the last day. And then then the house of Judah, the tribe of Judah, is in charge of this kingdom of Israel. And so therefore you have then the proclamation of the good news of salvation through the blood of the everlasting covenant of Yahshua. And then you go preach Hebrews chapter 10, first and foremost, about how this blood of the everlasting covenant of Yahshua works. It's called through the new and living way. And so when you finally become sanctified by the blood of the everlasting kingdom, to sanctify your kingdom first, that you've restored, you got to first sanctify your kingdom. Or your kingdom has to be sanctified by the Son, the blood of the Son. And He's the one that sets it up and sets His right people upon the throne of it. And then He stays and rules upon that same throne, Yahshua the Son. And then He leads out and using this kingdom then of heaven that Yahshua has come back and personally set up Himself, supervisor setting it up. Then He takes that kingdom and empowers it with the power of Pentecost on an antitypical day of Pentecost, and then this kingdom goes around the world harvesting their Gentile brethren from all nations, kindred, tongue, and people, Isaiah 66. And they bring to this holy mountain that has been sanctified, where this sanctified kingdom of heaven has been set up. That's in Jerusalem, Israel, in the last days. So there's a lot more to it than meets the eye. So it says right here that here we see that the last gospel to be proclaimed. And I'll go back and bring it more clearly. Here we see that the everlasting gospel of Daniel 2, 4, 4, and 45, that is to be set up in the days of these kings here, these 10 total kings here in the last days, in the 12th parabolic hour, the last hour of the probationary time, is to be proclaimed, is the teaching of the plan of salvation through the blood of the everlasting covenant of the Yahshua in a new and living way. And that's, you start with Hebrews chapter 10, the whole chapter, and it explains and makes it real clear how this here blood of the everlasting covenant works. Okay, most people think of this gospel as it pertains only unto the heavenly kingdom. This gospel is the heavenly kingdom being brought down to the earth by Yahshua. And it is the heavenly kingdom. For that gospel has been proclaimed for many years. No, the gospel that is of the heavenly kingdom that is set up here in the 12th parabolic hour on the last day during the judgment of the living time has never been proclaimed. It was attempted to be proclaimed by the 5th angel in 1888 when Jones and Wagner brought the message of righteousness by faith at the General Conference meeting there in Minneapolis in 1888 to 1890. They did bring that gospel of the kingdom, heavenly kingdom, down to earth. It came down to earth, and Jones and Wagner was given that to explain it in its infancy to the Adventists there at that Minneapolis conference. They were given 2 years to get the message over. But the General Conference, which was nothing but a bunch of infiltrated Jesuit priests that had come in and taken over the General Conference, slipped in the way and wouldn't allow the nominal Adventist members, Ellen G. White's Adventists, to accept that message. They stood in the way of it. Caused the Adventists as a whole then to reject it in 2 years. But it says, for this last kingdom message must be pertaining unto some other phase of it. So he's saying this last kingdom message that I'm preaching today, it has to be pertaining to some other phase of it. What is the gospel of the kingdom? This man, Jay Walters, is asking the question. For the defining of this more clearly, it is necessary to read other scriptures on the subject. For the Bible is its own expositor. One passage will prove to be a key that will unlock other passages, and in this way, light will be shed upon the hidden meaning of the word. By the comparing different texts treating on the same subject, viewing their bearing on every side, the true meaning of the scriptures will be made evident. And that is taken. Isaiah states that precept must be upon precept. Here a little and there a little. Isaiah 28:10. Our first scripture to consider is found in the book of Daniel, for it speaks of a kingdom that is to be established upon the earth in the last days. And I'll go on and say in the 12th parabolic hour, the last parabolic hour that we're in right today since 2002, all Bible scholars are familiar with the Nebuchadnezzar's dream of the great metallic image, and how Daniel was the only one who could explain its meaning in order for the understanding what the gospel of the kingdom is. So it takes a prophet. When this gospel of the kingdom was first given, it was given to Nebuchadnezzar, the king of Babylon, in a dream. But he couldn't understand it. It took a prophet of Judah, Daniel, there was a he was a captive there in the kingdom. It took a prophet to interpret it. And if there is not a prophet to interpret this vision that was given to Nebuchadnezzar, then there is a death sentence for all the wise men that lived in Babylon, starting with the 300 of Nebuchadnezzar's own wise men. He ordered them all to be killed because they couldn't interpret his dream. He said, including Daniel. And Daniel, he intervened, and Yahweh interceded for him to the king, and Daniel asked for time, and they gave him time, and Daniel talked to Yahweh about it, and Yahweh gave him the interpretation of the dream that he gave to Nebuchadnezzar, and Daniel saved all the wise men that was going to be destroyed by Nebuchadnezzar, his wise men, plus he saved his own life, and continued on being the prophet in the kingdom. So it says, and Daniel was the only one who could explain this meaning. In order to understand what the gospel of the kingdom is, it is necessary that we review the entire dream and Daniel's interpretation of it. The Gospel of the Kingdom. That's our next subtitle. It says, you recall that Daniel was one of the captives from the tribe of Judah that was taken into Babylon. When the king Nebuchadnezzar besieged Jerusalem, Daniel was one of the select few who was placed in the king's palace to be trained for the service in the Babylonian court in the second year of the reign of Nebuchadnezzar. The king had a very impressive dream. After he awoke, he was unable to recall what it was. He commanded the magicians, astrologers, sorcerers, and the Chaldeans to tell him what he had dreamed and to interpret its meaning. When they were unable to do so, he threatened to have all the wise men slain. When the news of this drastic decree reached Daniel, he requested the king to give him time to pray to his Yahweh that he would show him the dream and its meaning. Then Daniel and three of his Hebrew companions prayed to Yahweh to reveal unto them the king's dream and its interpretation. Then was a secret revealed unto Daniel in a night, a vision. Then Daniel addressed the Yahweh of the heaven. Immediately he approached Ariel, the one ordained for the destroying of the wise men of Babylon, and made the following request. Destroy not the wise men of Babylon. Bring me in before the king, and I will show unto the king the interpretation. For the Arioch brought in the Daniel before the king in the haste, and said, I have found a man of the captives of the Judah that will make known unto the king the interpretation. For the king answered and said unto Daniel, whose name is Belshazzar, art thou able to make known unto me the dream which I have seen and the interpretation thereof? Daniel 2:19-24-26. Daniel answered, there is a Yahweh in the heaven that revealeth secrets and maketh known unto the king Nebuchadnezzar, which shall be in the latter days. For thy dream and the visions of thy head upon thy bed are these. As for thee, O King, thy thoughts came into thy mind upon thy bed, which is come to pass hereafter, and he that revealeth secrets maketh known unto thee what shall come to pass. Thou, O King, sawest, and behold, a great image. This great image, whose brightness was excellent, stood before thee, and the form thereof was terrible. For this image's head was of the fine gold, his breast and his arms of the silver, his belly and his thighs of the brass, his legs of the iron, his feet part of the iron and part of the clay. Thou sawest till that a stone was cut out without the hand, which smote the image upon his feet, that were of the iron and the clay, and brake them to pieces. Then was the iron, the clay, the brass, the silver, and the gold broken to pieces together, and became like the chaff of the summer threshing floor for them, and the stone that smote the image became a great mountain and filled the whole earth. Daniel 2, 28, 29, 31, 35. See chart on page 9, and in the center page of this booklet. Then Daniel gave the interpretation of the dream. Thou, O King, art a King of kings, for the Yahweh of the heaven hath given thee a kingdom, power and strength and glory. And wheresoever the children of men dwell, the beasts of the field and the fowls of the heaven hath he given into thine hand, and hath made thee ruler over them all. Thou art the head of the gold, and after thee shall arise another kingdom, inferior unto thee. And another third kingdom of the breast, which shall bear a rule over all the earth. And the fourth kingdom shall be strong as iron, for as much as iron breaketh in pieces, and subdueth all things. And as iron that breaketh all these, shall it break in pieces and bruise. And whereas thou sawest the feet and toes, part of the potter's clay and part of the iron, the kingdom shall be divided, but there shall be in it of the strength of the iron, forasmuch as thou sawest the iron mixed with the miry clay. And as the toes of the feet were part of the iron and part of clay, so the kingdom shall be partly strong and partly broken. And whereas thou sawest iron mixed with the miry clay, they shall mingle themselves with the seed of men, but they shall not cleave one to another, even as iron is not mixed with the clay. And in the days of these kings shall the Yahweh of the heavens set up a kingdom. Now see, we had all these kingdoms described. There have been five kingdoms described here. And so, now we have the kingdom of heaven being described as succeeding, and these five kingdoms that has already been described to you, that was Babylon, Medo, Persia, Grecia, Rome, and these are 10 toes of this great image, which is your fifth kingdom, which shall never be destroyed. The Yahweh in the days of these kings, okay, that's in the days of this fifth kingdom that is set up, which shall never be destroyed, and the kingdom shall not be left unto other people, but it shall break in pieces and consume all these kingdoms, and it shall stand forever. For as much as thou sawest that the stone was cut out of the mountain without the hands, and that it break in pieces the iron, the brass, the clay, the silver, and the gold, the great Yahweh hath made known unto the king what shall come to pass hereafter. And the dream is certain, and the interpretation thereof sure. Daniel 2:37-45. Daniel's interpretation of the king's dream foretold the successive kingdoms that were to rule the world from the time of ancient Babylon down to our present day. History confirms Daniel's identification of those nations. The head of the gold represented Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon. The chest and the arms of silver represented Medo-Persia, with Cyrus as the king of that. The belly and the thighs of brass, represented by Alexander, the Grecian king. The legs of iron, that was represented by Rome, Imperial Rome, okay, at the cross and before the cross. And the feet, part of iron and part of clay, our present world, for the ten toes perfectly symbolizes our world today being divided into several kingdoms and not ruled by a world monarch, as were the previous kingdoms. For the object of the dream and its interpretation was to show unto the king what was to happen in the latter days. Daniel 2:28. In the time of the ten-toed kings. This is where we're at today. We're in the time of this fifth kingdom that is operating in the world today. And it's a mixture of the beasts, the Catholics, the Masonic Lodge, the Masons, the Illuminati, and the Communists. They're all rolled into one that is trying to rule the world. But they can't cleave together. Those five main powers, they can't cleave together, so therefore they can't rule the world. But they're trying to. They just got through with a big meeting, economic world meeting, there in Davos, up in the Netherlands. Just finishes up January 20th. And they are in shambles. They're going to try to sit in a new world order dominion, but Daniel's prophecy won't allow it. What we just read won't allow that to happen, so we don't have to worry about them being successful. And it says Daniel's interpretation of the king's dream foretold the successive kingdoms that were to rule the world. Okay. The object of the dream and its interpretation was to show unto the king what was to happen in the latter days, and that's the days that we're in today, the 12th parabolic hour. We've been in the latter days since actually 2003. Started the Passover. 2002 is when we entered into the latter days. The 12th parabolic hour, the last symbolic hour of daylight time for working in the vineyard, is considered the last days. And what is the last hour? It's the last hour of a 12-hour daylight period, the 12th hour. Well, the 12th parabolic hour then would be the latter days, the last day. Yahweh's kingdom to be established while the ten-toed kings are still in existence. So that's where we're at today. And Yahweh has established his kingdom with Elijah David, the one speaking to you now. And the one that nobody wants to hear now. They want to hear everybody else but this Elijah David with this last message of the kingdom of heaven to let them know who they are and where they're at in the stream of time. They don't want to hear it. Yahweh's kingdom is to be established while the 10-toed kings are still in existence. For the ancient kingdoms, Babylon, Medo-Persia, Grecia, and Rome, that once ruled the world, have all one by one passed away. Then Daniel draws a comparison between Yahweh's kingdom, as represented by the stone, and the kingdoms of this world. He states that Yahweh's kingdom, unlike the previous kingdoms, will never be destroyed or succeeded by some other power, but that it will stand forever. Daniel 2:44-45. That's a kingdom that I've been given to sit up. My wife and I have been given it together to sit up. And we've always set it up. And we've been preaching this kingdom for 20 years. And so far we've got one convert that's in training. 20 years we got one convert. Will never be destroyed or succeeded by some other power, but that it will stand forever, Daniel 2:44-45. For the point that many Bible scholars overlook when studying this prophecy is that the kingdom which Yahweh is going to establish takes place while the 10-toed kings are still in existence and in power. That's one thing that the writers leave out here. They say, yeah, the 10-toed kings are in existence, but they don't mention that they're in power. As the scripture says, in the days of these kings, that's the 10-toed kings, not after their day, shall the Yahweh of the heavens set up a kingdom which shall never be destroyed. Daniel 2:44. Daniel then relates unto us how this kingdom comes into the existence. In its beginning stage, it is compared unto a stone that is cut out of a mountain without hands. It then hits the image on its feet. And that image right now is what's been is in operation right now. And it's run by the Joe Biden, the President of the United States administration. And you tell me he's not in power. He's in power, and he's doing what the dictators of the globalists are dictating to him to do. And so the days of these kings is actually run indirectly by these New World Order people, the globalists, the Illuminati, the Masons, the Masonic Lodge, and the Beast, the Catholic Church. They've all joined together. And they're running this world through the President, Joe Biden, of the United States. It then hits the image on his feet. So this gospel of the truth that Elijah David is teaching is the truth that's going to hit and destroy Joe Biden's administration. And indirectly it destroys the New World Order that George Bush Sr. set up in 1991. George Bush Jr., George Bush Sr., Hubert Walker Bush. It then hits the image on his face, causing the stone to increase in size until it becomes another mountain that will eventually fill the whole earth. The little stone is the origin of this big mountain. The little stone don't cause it to develop into another mountain. This little stone is this mountain, one mountain. It then hits the image on its feet, causing the stone to increase in the size until it becomes a great mountain, not another mountain. It becomes the great mountain that was prophesied to become. And that's because it's taking on converts. That's what makes it grow into a great mountain, is live converted people from around the world that will eventually fill the whole earth, Daniel 2:34-35. Note that the stone that hits the image upon his feet, not its head, chest, belly, or leg. This shows the time when the Yahweh will set up his kingdom in the latter days. In order for the gaining of a better understanding of this prophecy, we must next identify the mountain from which the stone is cut. It says, what does a mountain represent? Daniel said that a stone was cut out of the mountain without the hand. Daniel 2:45. In our booklet, number 3, pages 29-31, and booklet number 5, page 76, we found that a mountain, when used as a symbol in the scriptures, represent a church. Isaiah, and commenting on the time when the Yahweh's remnant, 144,000, will bring in the earth's final harvest into Yahweh's purified church, said, "And they shall bring all your brethren for an offering unto the Yahweh out of all nations, unto my holy mountain, Jerusalem, saith the Yahweh, as the children of Israel bring an offering in a clean vessel into the house of the Yahweh." Isaiah 6:20. Here we see that Isaiah equates a holy mountain with the house of the Yahweh. Yahweh's church. See also Zechariah 8:3, Isaiah 56:7, Answer Book page 9, and Psalm 15:1. Since Laodicea is the seventh and last church in which the wheat and the tares are co-mingled, as noted in the book of the Revelation, Revelation 1:11, Revelation 3:14-18, then the mountain in this prophecy must represent Laodicea as the Seventh-day Adventist church. That's been found in Testimony, Volume 3, page 252 by Ellen G. White. For the next point we want to establish is the identity of the stone and how it is cut out of the mountain without the hands. Whom does the stone represent? Some have thought that the stone that hits the image upon his feet represents Yahshua at his second coming. Ellen G. White did not teach this. In 1971, a letter of the inquiry was sent unto the Ellen G. White's estate, asking for the verification of any statement from E. G. White's pen stating that Yahshua was the stone of Daniel 2:45. In response, the following letter was received from the author L. White, Ellen G. White's son, I believe, or grandson, that was in charge of the Ellen G. White's estate there in Washington, D.C. I talked to author L. White on the phone in about 1971-72. In October, you wrote to us asking if we could direct you to a statement from Mrs. White Penn indicating that Yahshua was the stone of Daniel 2:45. This has been the holding of the denomination down through the years. Ellen White touches the matter of this vision of the Nebuchadnezzar rather than lightly. She does not go into the great detail rather lightly. She does not go into great detail, so we are unable to direct you to any statement from her pen on this point. And another letter from Ellen G. White's estate, dated February 17, 1987, It is stated that repeatedly Ellen White refers to it, the stone, as the setting up of Yahweh's everlasting kingdom of the Daniel 2:44-45. That's I teach. In the days of these kings, of these ten-toed kings, which were in the 12th parabolic hour, see chart on page 14 depicting Daniel's great metallic image. Corresponding with it are the same time period represented by the symbolic beast of Daniel and Revelation. When placing these symbols side by side, we can see that the stone hitting the image on its feet could not be the second coming of Yahshua, because there are other events to transpire after the time period of the ten toes, Daniel 2, and the leopard-like beast, Revelation 13. Immediately following the time period represented by the leopard-like beast is another world power, as represented by Babylon the Great, sitting upon a scarlet-colored beast, Revelation 17. In the time of the ten toes represented by the iron mixed with the clay, the nations do not cleave together, Daniel 2:43. John's leopard-like beast, corresponding with the same time period, also shows the nations ruling independently, as symbolized by the ten crown horns, Revelation 13:1-11, whereas the period following the leopard-like beast and the ten toes of the metallic image depicts a time when the world will once again be ruled by one head, Babylon the Great, for one last symbolic hour. That's in the 12th hour we're in now, and that's who's ruling right now. With the Joe Biden administration, President of the United States, the kings of the earth will have one mind, will cleave together as they give their power and strength unto the beast. Revelation 17, 12 and 13. See our booklet number 5, Babylon's Final Hour, page 84. Whom then does this stone represent? For the Apostle Peter compares the righteous to lively stones that make up the Yahweh's spiritual temple. He also, as lively stones, are built up a spiritual house and a holy priesthood for the offering up the spiritual sacrifices acceptable unto Yahweh by the Yahshua. 1 Peter 2:5. For the spirit of prophecy and the confirmation of this says, His church on the earth is to assume divine proportions before the world as a temple built of the living stone, each one reflecting light. It is to be the light of the world as a city set on a hill, which cannot be hid. That's the volume 8, Testimonies, 173. Okay. Testimonies, page 422. Testimonies of ministry, that is. Okay, it says, since the stone was cut out of the mountain, and the mountain represents the Seventh-day Adventist Church, see page 12, then the stone must be a smaller portion of a remnant from the Yahweh's church. He directs that remnant to finish his work. That remnant would be the 144,000. That remnant to finish his work in the world. The next point we need to establish is how the stone is separated from the mountain. The stone separated from the mountain. What did Daniel mean when he said the stone was cut out of the mountain without the hand? Daniel 2:45. This action definitely shows a separation. The term without hands, it positively shows this separation. It's not done by a man. Therefore, it must be accomplished by the supernatural man. Since it is not done by the man's hand, then it must be something only Yahweh can do. For the inspiration explains that the work of the separation is given unto the angels of Yahweh and not committed into the hands of any man. Testimony, page 47, Ministers. This has a reference unto the time when the tares are separated from the wheat in the church, just prior unto the proclamation of the loud cry. One reason why this work of the separation cannot be done by man is because human beings cannot see the mark which the man in the linen places on the foreheads of the 144,000. These are those who sigh and cry for all the abominations that be done in the church. See Ezekiel 9:1-11. 5, Testimonies 2:11. 505, 3T267. What is the seal of the living Yahweh, which is placed in the foreheads of his people? It is a mark which angels, but not human eyes, can read. For the destroying angel must see this mark of the redemption. Letter 126, 1898, 4 BC, 1161. Now we can see that the cutting out of the stone without the hands refers unto the purification of the Seventh-day Adventist Church with the separation of the wheat, the 144,000, the remnant, from the tares, the gold from the dross. That's Testimony, Volume 5, 81. For more detailed information on this subject, review our booklet number 2, page 36 to 52. The man, the third angel, Ellen G. White, 118. Early writings, page 118 by Ellen G. White. With the writer's inkhorn, places a mark upon those who sigh and cry for all the abominations done in the Jerusalem, Yahweh's church, and then follows the five men angels who slay all who do not receive the mark. Ezekiel 9:1-11. Inspiration describes this separation as a terrible ordeal. We are told that the church may appear as about to fall, but it does not fall. It remains, while the sinners in Zion will be sifted out, the chaff separated from the precious wheat. This is a terrible ordeal, but nevertheless, it must take place. Note that those who have been overcoming by the blood of the Lamb, that's the only way you can do it, is you have to have the blood of the Lamb to take away your sins, and you have to be practicing the ordained system of true worship in this sanctuary in order for this to happen. With the loyalty and the true, without the spot or stain of the sin, without the gall in their mouth. 2 SM 380, John the Revelator describes 144,000 as those having no gall. See Revelation 14:5. For the size of the stone in the relation unto the mountain portrays a sad and tragic story. Its depiction unmistakably shows that the majority in the church will not have a part in the finishing. The majority in the Seventh-day Adventist Church will not have a part in the finishing of the gospel work. For the inspiration attests that the greater part are lukewarm professors, having a name but no zeal. 4T 87. In the last solemn work, few great men will be engaged. They are self-sufficient, independent of Yahweh, and he cannot use them. 5T 80. Few know what our churches are to experience. Few are heartily devoted unto Yahweh. That's in Testimony, Volume 5, page 76. Therefore, when the stone is cut out of the mountain, this is the everlasting kingdom of David. That's what we represent. And I was taken out of that Mount Gilead at Kermit, Texas, the third feeding pastor for the Seventh-day Adventist, with a prophet at the head, Brother W. Johnson, He was the last prophet to the Adventists during the Judgment of the Dead period. And his time ended in 2003. That mountain will cause to cease to exist. Okay, it says, therefore, when the stone is cut out of the Seventh-day Adventist mountain, that mountain will cease to exist, as the terrors are removed by the angels of Yahweh, leaving only a remnant, 144,000, to finish their work. And a vision given unto Ellen White, she was shown the startling fact that but a small portion of those who now profess the truth will be sanctified by it and be saved. And that's Testimony 1, page 60. And far back as 1893, it was stated that not one in 20 whose names are registered upon the church books are prepared to close their earthly history and world be as verily without Yahweh and without hope in a world as a common sinner. They are professedly serving Yahweh, but they are more earnestly serving Mammon. General Conference Bulletin, 1893, by Ellen White. Okay, only those who have witnessed or withstood temptation and the strength of the Mighty One will be permitted to act a part in the proclaiming of the third angel's message when it shall have swelled into the loud cry by this fifth group of laborers that was called at the 11th hour, not by that ninth group of laborers that was called in 1844 at the ninth hour. I mean, that fourth group of laborers that was called at the ninth hour in 1844, the Seventh-day Adventist. Review and Herald, November 19, 1908. In 1886, the servant of Yahweh stated that the great issues so near at hand will weed out those whom Yahweh has not appointed, and he will have a pure, true, sanctified ministry prepared for the latter rain. Letter 55, 1886. Therefore, we would understand that the stone being cut out of the mountain portrays the purification of the Yahweh's Seventh-day Adventist Church, leaving 144,000 as the loud cry ministry for the reaping of the earth's final harvest. This brings the end of our study. This hour, contact us at the 11th hour. Call us number 11. Click on the audio archives. Hear this message. And we're going to close now with a song.
So ever will. Whosoever heareth, shout, shout the sound, send the blessed tidings all the world around. Spread the joyful news where every man is found. Whosoever will may come. Whosoever will. Proclamation over vale and hill. Is a loving father as a wanderer home. Is a wreck the world may come. Whosoever cometh need not delay. Now the door is open, enter by ye may. Now shivers the truth. The only living way, whosoever will may come, whosoever will, send the proclamation over vale and hill. Is a loving father, calls a wanderer home, whosoever will may come. Whosoever will, a promise secure. Whosoever will, forever must endure. Whosoever will, his lot forevermore. Whosoever will, may come. Whosoever will, send the proclamation of the valley. Heavenly Father, who's a wonder home.